virtual reality is permeating multiple aspects of our lives, from science to medicine to sports to leisure time at home. And the technology is rapidly evolving to the point where a number of questions about how we use VR have emerged. That has led Jim Spiegel, professor of philosophy and religion at Taylor University, to produce a paper called The Ethics of Virtual Reality Technology, Social Hazards and Public Policy Recommendations. So, Professor, has virtual reality become a replacement for reality for some people? And that brings its own dangers, right?
The VR technologies in terms of games that are out there and that will probably emerge that feature all sorts of violence and sexual content are really scary in that way. And in terms of the potential for escape, that's a concern as well. You know, what VR games offer is a kind of as-if experience in a virtual world where there is no moral accountability. In fact, you can act on whatever desires you want to. And the worry is that there will be a sort of collapsing of the real and virtual that could taint the real person. Unlike, say, acting in a film or in a theatrical production where you're always aware that you're performing for an audience, VR can be perfectly private, and so one can indulge their more base impulses as much as they want. And if one does this on a regular basis, the worry is that that could have a seriously negative effect on a person's moral sensitivity.
Is there regulation? Do we need regulation to at least put some sort of line in the sand about, you know, you need to be 21 years old to do a certain kind of virtual reality? Is there anything related to that that you would advocate?
Already in place with some VR manufacturers are some kind of general information and warning labels that this game might not be appropriate for people of all ages and so on. What I'm recommending, though, is something more along the lines of an actual rating system, much like is done for Hollywood films, and to standardize that. Also, I'd like to see, at least for some VR technologies, a minimum age requirement, just so kids won't be exposed to some of the more extremely violent or sexually explicit VR games. I'd like to see more detailed information and warning labels, and also in the interest of protecting personal privacy, some public disclosure mandates that would require VR companies to declare the sorts of personal data that they share with other companies, because what is possible is gathering people's physical and psychological tendencies as they use these devices. Also, some no-share laws seem appropriate, which would create legal restrictions regarding VR companies sharing of especially personal data that regarding a person's physical and psychological characteristics.
How susceptible do you think we are morally and ethically to the appeal of this kind of thing, whether as an escape or just because we're also used to using high tech, and then social media has now advanced into VR, and VR seemed like a sci-fi concept, and now it's something that we can enjoy ourselves. You know, we can get a Christmas gift that's related to VR.
Yeah, I think what we're seeing here is really the law of diminishing returns in effect, where, you know, we get more and more exciting and stimulating video games. We want something more stimulating, more exciting. And so it goes for Hollywood films. And now VR, you know, the attraction of this is that it is that much more realistic than any video game or Hollywood film you've seen. And so it's for that reason more attractive. So I think we're going to see an increasing interest. You know, there is difference of opinion among cultural forecasters as to how popular this will be. Will it converge with social media in the way that some are predicting? Who knows? But I do expect, and I think it's safe to predict, that it's going to become very popular, particularly among young people.
Do we lose some boundaries once we're in there, or as we're escaping, that we forget about or don't feel what the danger may be as we, not to be too dramatic, but as people sink deeper and deeper into the VR experience?
Yeah, I think that varies across a population. And I think as it is with alcohol and caffeine, cigarettes, people are different. And, you know, depending upon, you know, a person's individual psychology, they'll be more or less at risk for overindulgence So it goes with everything. And but one of my worries here is that particularly with young people who don't have the kind of self-control or filters that we have developed as adults, that they could potentially be victimized or negatively affected psychologically by exposure to, you know, especially violent VR games. There, you know, is data that researchers have noted that chronic exposure to violent video games tends to produce more aggressive thoughts and behaviors in children. Again, this is across a population. I think how much more so would this hyper-real VR technology tend to produce that response in young people, and even some adults?
Jim Spiegel is a professor of philosophy and religion at Taylor University who's written about the ethics of virtual reality technology. VR has been credited with helping scientists expand their base of knowledge, and there are a number of health applications as well. Shanna Skolnick is with me to talk about some of those advances. She's co-founder and CEO of Navteca, a company that focuses on emerging tech. So, Shanna, where do you think some of VR's greatest impact will come from?
I think it's going to revolutionize education and training by being able to put people in locations that are very difficult or costly to access or impossible, such as on the surface of a planet, or even back in time on the battlefield, Civil War battlefield, even back in ancient Rome. So giving people access to that kind of information is unprecedented. At Navteca, we're using it for science and looking at Earth data. And if you think about the Earth and its atmosphere, the Earth and its oceans being spherical, it makes sense that virtual reality and that inherently spherical view can give us new information about the data. And then also even just for news and storytelling, so really giving people access to information in a way that makes them feel like they're there, it creates an empathy in people. And there have been a lot of very impactful use cases around using 360 video content and virtual reality content for fundraising, for or just even to drive empathy for different social causes, for NGOs. The United Nations was one of the first ones to use this, and their content was putting people in Syrian refugee camps, which was pretty amazing and really allowed people to feel like they were there and have a different kind of empathy than maybe they had had previously.
Do you think we have control, basically, over whether it is used for good purposes or bad? And do we get too caught up in determining whether, okay, here are the big concerns, or, oh, it's fantastic? Is it so complex that we need to just sort of deal with it for what it is and realize that there are very positive applications to it?
It is complex, but I don't view it differently than other types of technology that we have. So if you think about the evolution of the telephone, for example, from landline to cell phone to smartphone, and that gradual acceptance of the technology. When cell phones first came out, I think that there was a lot of pushback in society from people who said, you know, it's not positive to be able to be reached all the time, you know, what is happening to humanity if we don't have a moment alone. And now we think about this day and age where the smartphone is ubiquitous and it is a double-edged sword. We have access to amazing functionality through these devices. And when you think about all of the things that the smartphone has replaced, not just the telephone, but the fact that you have a calculator and a flashlight and a compass and a GPS navigation device, and the entire internet in your pocket, I mean, that's pretty amazing. So I think that that's where we're going with virtual and augmented reality technologies, is that we can't necessarily imagine all of the amazing functionality and all of the devices that they will replace in our lives, but it's up to us to make sure that the technology is used for an overall positive benefit.
The world is flat was a big thing when it came to trade and this sort of thing. But I think of the world is flat when it comes to virtual reality, because it seems, even when you're talking about empathy, it seems as though this is another way to really bridge the gap between people who are very far away from each other from a physical sense.
Yes, absolutely. And that is something that virtual reality has the capacity to do. You hear people, the naysayers, saying that virtual reality will separate us. It's just another way for technology to isolate people, when in fact, some of the major companies, tech companies in the world, are investing in virtual reality precisely because they view it as the next social media platform. Facebook, for example, bought Oculus, and is heavily investing in being able to create real-time gestures and lip movements and eye movements based on the positional trackers that are currently commercially available today. Now, that's still an avatar in the sense that it looks like an animated character, but we're probably not that many years far off of being able to have a digital scan of ourselves and then being able to align that to our gestures so that we can have, instead of a conference call, we could have a virtual call through an avatar that looks like us, gestures like us, has head movements just like ours. Is it the same as being face-to-face? No. Will it replace that? No, but you can think about the benefits in terms of bringing people together from across the world to be able to communicate and collaborate.
Shanna Skolnick is co-founder and CEO of Navteca, a company that focuses on emerging tech.